Good afternoon. We have a very feeble little thing. Sounds like somebody is like got jawbreakers. Yeah, 7,000.
And you notice that little gold band on it has their name. Center for they have a different committee, and I was talking to Senator Marty about it. He's got several different day out people.
That's painful. Boy, that sounds like the Senate, Representative Carlson. Welcome, Representative Shumper. Representative Shumper has testifiers who have been waiting for us, so we're glad you're here. We're going to do Representative Shumper's bill first. So I will go ahead and move House Bill 2464 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Public Finance Bill. Representative Shumper, welcome.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And representatives, I think the first thing we should do is my delete all amendment. I hope you have a copy of it.
Is that the DE1?
Yes, it is.
And I will move the DE1 amendment to get it in the order the author would like it. Discussion to the DE1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Madam Chair, if I can just start to explain what might be unusual activity for a bill like this late in the session. Houston County, where I live, and one of the two counties I represent, is in the process of building a criminal justice center, and they have been intensively at this process for the last year or so. We have the distinction of having the oldest jail in Minnesota, built during the Civil War, and we need to improve it or update it or do something different. And so we're in that process right now, and the county board is currently looking at different architectural plans. This process actually was started intensively last summer, and throughout the process, different plans have been floated, and there's been a number of public hearings and public input process. The upshot of it is that the plan that the county has decided on involving a criminal justice center, which means a new courthouse, courtrooms, administrative buildings for the court administrator and sheriff's offices, turns out to be wildly unpopular in the county and specifically in the city of Caledonia, which is our county seat. And so last fall, concerned citizens, three of whom I have here today, circulated a petition in anticipation of a reverse referendum. Again, they looked at the various statutes that apply to county bonding and felt that the county board would be pursuing one of the several options, and so they, in anticipation, circulated and collected 1,200 signatures requesting a referendum on the proposed criminal justice center. Well, and there's been a tremendous amount of discussion and back and forth, and including with myself. I'm in kind of the unusual situation as having talked extensively about this issue with the county board chairperson last week, and she and I both agreeing that we had a good rapport. I'm hoping it survives this. And I have to say I've been strongly trying to talk the county board into choosing one of the options that would either require a referendum or allow for a reverse referendum. Pretty clearly they have decided not to do that, and in fact it appears to many people that they are trying to circumvent some pretty clear statutory laws for a referendum or reverse referendum by going through a leasing program which does not require a referendum or allow for a referendum. And needless to say, it's a difficult situation. Many people in the county would like a chance to vote on this criminal justice center. It's not something you build every decade or every five decades. It's probably will never happen again in my lifetime. And so I'm here today with a bill that I've tried to make as small and as narrow as possible to give the people of our county a chance to vote on this criminal justice center. Simple as that. And I have three witnesses here, Madam Chair, if they could make some brief comments.
That would be great.
Go ahead.
Welcome to the committee.
Pull the microphone up close.
Thank you, Madam Chair, representatives. Thank you for allowing us to speak to you today. My name is Bob Klug, I'm a business owner, lifelong resident of Caledonia, which is a small town of approximately 300 people, and it's also the Houston County seat. I am gravely concerned for my community. Our current county jail is 132 years old, the oldest in the state, I believe, and I know that we need a new jail. Our county commissioners have presented a plan for a new criminal justice center that is approximately 70,000 square feet in size and will increase the number of inmate beds from 14 that they currently have to 82 in the new facility. That's 82 beds. The current jail didn't have an overcrowding problem until 2002. The overcrowding is a result of the new DUI laws, and many believe that incarcerating those violators is not working. I've got an article from Judge Shalene from Monona that really spells it out quite well. They have chosen a site adjacent to the current courthouse in the middle of our community. So far, the county has purchased 9 homes in the residential area around the current courthouse and has already demolished 6 of them. All of this has been done with taxpayer dollars for a project that hasn't even been funded. There are plans to purchase more homes in the future. The new structure will be sandwiched between 2 Victorian homes, one of which is mine, with only enough room for a sidewalk on either side. They are asking that the city close 2 streets around the courthouse and grant variances for other issues. This is a highly controversial project. When the initial plan was presented to the public on March 16th in 2006, there was a tremendous amount of opposition. At that time, I started circulating a petition asking for a referendum on this project. According to Minnesota statutes, I needed 550 signatures. Within 1 week, I had more than 600. My phone was ringing, my inbox was busier than my daughter's, and people were knocking on my door, all for a chance to sign this petition. I now have 1,200 signatures of citizens who want a voice in how their tax dollars are spent. And I have a copy of that petition with me today. Unfortunately, this petition is only relevant if the county votes to use capital improvement bonds for this project. Our county is not planning to use capital improvement bonds and will probably use a bond with a higher rate of interest just so a referendum will not be necessary. The state has set guidelines for bonding on county jails with limits related to a percent of taxable market value of the county. But the county board can skirt this limit by using 2 different types of bonds or by bonding in 2 consecutive years. The people of Caledonia and Houston County are overwhelmingly against this project, but the county does not seem to listen. We feel we deserve a vote on how our tax dollars are being spent. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Fred Arnold. I'm a dairy and beef farmer about 4.5 miles outside of Caledonia. I served on the school board in Spring Grove for about 19 years, and I'd like to approach this situation for just a moment from that standpoint. During the time that I was on that board, we had 2 instances where we needed to do something with our building. One was an addition, and the other was a remodeling project. Both of those projects were sort of started by the Department of Education asking us to do something about our building because it wasn't quite adequate anymore, sort of like the Houston County Jail. Nobody debates that Houston County needs a new jail. Well, the schools, you have to go through a referendum, a bond referendum. The voters have to speak to whether you can build the building that you would like to do as a school board or not. And we found as a board that that was a good thing. It helped us a lot to keep our feet on the ground and be realistic about what we really wanted in those remodeling and addition projects. And my request is that the county be treated a little bit more the same as a school district in that respect. I felt that the voters were very fair. The voters were, we did our best to inform the voters. They were very intelligent about it. We had a good time doing it. We were successful with both referendums. And the voters are good, after all. They elected you. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Welcome.
My name is Larry Saul. I'm a senior citizen. I live in Caledonia, right on Main Street. There is a tremendous amount of senior citizens that are really concerned about this project, and for several reasons. We're all basically on limited income. It's a real committed community in which many of them originated from the farm or the rural area around, and therefore their social security is very low. We have many of them who are living in the houses in Caledonia right now. Our tax base has increased in our taxes by about 40% in the last 4 years, ever since this project was even initiated. If you stop to think, Houston County has a total population of less than 20,000 people. You take on to that the proposal of building a $15 million center, justice center, that equals to about $750,000 per 1,000 people. Now, if the state of Minnesota did that and said, okay, we're going to build a state prison at a cost of $750,000 per 1,000 people, can you imagine what that would amount to? Can you imagine what our taxes would increase on? You know, energy right now has increased about 30% or more. Our senior citizens, there's several of them that are going to end up losing their houses for certain. And the biggest problem from there on is they still won't have any place to live because, like most communities, there is a shortage of senior citizen housing. So it is a tremendous stress, burden, everything else. I mean, the senior citizens have enough to worry about with health situations the way they are, never mind adding this other function. We're not against the jail. We're against the fact that they began and reprocessed it. Number one is saying that they were going to build a jail, and then we ended up tearing on the rest of the center. You know, they started off with a project that was controllable into something that is simply not controllable, and it's actually, in my estimation, it's taxation without representation. And I don't think that any city should be allowed, or county should be allowed to do that. We should have a right to vote on where our money is spent. Thank you all very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Wolfmeyer.
Well, Representative Shunker, you and I are very alike. I have the second oldest jail structure in the state of Minnesota, and we, that would be Wabasha County for, and, you know, I'll just cut to the chase here. We had a similar situation. I'm not sure that there was a petition, but we were dealing with a small number of units and then a proposed, I think we were actually 76 new beds. I found out later that it was bunk beds, so it's a little deceiving when we talk about all these beds because people think about rooms versus it's actually less rooms with bunks. But at any rate, citizens did complain and the proposal was scaled back. And so I guess that's my question to all of you. I mean, have you gone down this route, you know, without having the state to get involved?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Wolfsager, believe me, this issue has dominated the news in our county for about a year now. And meeting after meeting, you know, I was very reluctant to bring forth this legislation. I want to tell you that. And I've tried to construct it to be the narrowest legislation to affect the least amount of other counties or other interest in building jails and so on. We've exhausted our options, is what it amounts to. We simply cannot convince the county board to allow a referendum. And in fact, I think they're quite obviously going out of their way to avoid a referendum by approaching this least agreement method, which in fact is going to cost us more money. They're so intent on trying to circumvent a referendum that they're willing to cost us more money. And Larry mentioned $15 million. The price they're looking at today is $20 million. So, Bob, did you want to make a comment on?
Yeah, I would, if I could. That $20 million price tag, and this is the county's figures, over a 20-year bond, the price of the building is 10% of the cost over a 20-year bond. So that means that we'll be paying $10 million a year for that structure when our total budget is $21 million. And as far as trying to scale back the size, the last meeting I was at, they came up with plans that were somewhat scaled back. They did some cutting here and there, but at the last meeting they added everything back in again. So they're not scaling back at all. It's still the 70,000 square feet that it started with. They are hoping to have their final plans in 2 weeks. So there isn't a lot of time to hope that they'll scale back again. Originally, they wanted to connect to the old courthouse, and that's why the structure was put where it was, or where they wanted to put it. Now we're finding out that they can't connect to the old courthouse because of asbestos issues. So that means they can't use the old courtroom, so they have to build new courtrooms. Actually, there's going to be three new courtrooms in the structure. So as far as scaling it back, they refuse to do that. Part of the problem, and it's hard for me to say this to a group, part of the problem is the people that are designing this structure are the ones that are getting new offices. They had a couple different committees before. I'd like to mention that the sheriff isn't even on the planning committee for the structure. So it's not any smaller than it was before.
Thank you. Madam. I represent Simpson and De La Forest. Represent Simpson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I've got a half a dozen questions for Representative Chomper, and some of them have been answered already. I found it interesting to find that the population is 20,000 people, which is a small county, and now you're talking $20 million. That's pretty amazing. And I think you answered the question why it's being built where it is. It seems to me kind of ironic in today's age of trying to have space that they would come into a community and try and take down as many houses as they are to do that. So I kind of find that interesting. What type of housing stock do you have in that community, and how will this affect the housing for the community itself?
Well, you know, I think this has been the biggest bone of contention. You know, the criminal justice, because it's a very old, the courthouse and the jail are very old, the residential areas grew up around them. It sits essentially right in the middle of the residential part of Caledonia, and you know, it's older housing stock for the most part. Of course, the newer housing stock is on the outside of the community. You know, a lot of people have been trying to get the county board to locate the new center to the edge of town. We have several commercial areas designated for commercial development that, you know, I think would have been ideal, similar to what Fillmore County right next door has. They have a jail located on the edge of town, a newer facility, about a mile from their courthouse. And, you know, it's really going to be sort of disruption. I think right across from Bob's house is the Catholic Elementary School. So we're going to have the Catholic Elementary School right across from the new jail, essentially. A lot of people don't think that's the best location for things.
Okay. What, Madam Chair, Representative Chomper, how did the county come about this financing plan? And at any point did they talk about doing a regular GO on it? How did we get to this stage?
I think all of you have a two-page handout that says Houston County, Minnesota Statutory Borrowing Summary. This actually was provided by, as part of our public documents. It was done by Northland Securities Public Finance, one of the bonding companies, simply outlining the different options there. If you look at that, the different... they don't have a capital improvement plan, so they can't use that second option in the second column. The GO referendum bonds require a referendum, and that only leaves the following three options. And if you look at the third option there, the GO jail bonds, that's not sufficient to cover the proposal because it only covers a jail and a sheriff's office. It doesn't cover the courthouse or the courtrooms and the court administrator's offices. So they're, you know, by simply by process of elimination now, I think a week ago they hired Dorsey and Whitney as their bonding attorney, and you know, they're putting together a package for these lease revenue bond agreements.
And follow up, Madam Chair, Mr. Michael, is this this provision that we have in front of us, have we seen anything like this before in front of this committee, or is this new ground, or any thoughts on that?
Madam Chair, members of the Representative Simpson, I don't recall a similar proposal to subject, you know, any of these kinds of financings to a referendum or reverse referendum. It's been a situation for a long time where cities and counties have always had the out of being able to do these lease revenue bonds financings for various facilities, which you know, allows them to avoid the referendum and also generally avoids the net debt limits, and also has the peculiar twist of with regular GO debt that's approved by the voters is spread on referendum market value, which results in a higher tax on homeowners. Whereas if the city or the county uses this lease revenue bond option, they, as the testifiers have noted, pay higher interest rates on the bonds because the investors have weaker security and therefore insist on higher interest rates, and their homeowners get a break in paying lower taxes because it's spread on net tax capacity rather than market value.
Madam Chair,
well,
I'm certainly sympathetic to what these people are talking about here and where they're what they're trying to do. I don't know if is the legislature the place to come to make this type of a request on a 13th hour proposal. I guess that would be my concern and where we go with it. So,
Representative Shumper, well, Representative Simpson, I'd answer that. You know, Representative Shumper brought it to me, and I do think there is no other place but the legislature. If we're going to do this, the legislature determines the structure of local bonding and public finance provisions, and that's the role of this committee and the Senate Tax Committee. So, you know, I hear what you're saying, though, Representative Simpson. I guess, you know, part of the problems with jails and things like that is, you know, voters never want to approve things like jails. I mean, that's no fun. It's not like building a school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, you can imagine how difficult it is to put unpopular projects on the ballot and anticipate they're going to go down. On the other hand, there is a real problem that I think we should address, and if the county is using lease revenue bonds and they actually cost the taxpayer more and they're doing it to avoid a vote, which, you know, is speculative. I don't know if that's true or not, but we do know it costs more. Definitely cost more to the taxpayer. I mean, they should be looking for the lowest cost option. And in general, what we would then, if they did that, we would require a reverse referendum, which I think is what Representative Shumper is doing.
Right.
And that would allow then folks who feel that that decision by the county is onerous would have, they would have 30 days to get 10% of the registered voters to call for a reverse referendum. So, you know, until Representative Shumper brought this up to me, I wasn't really aware. I never really thought through that the fact that to avoid a vote, you'd have to pay a more expensive, it'd be more expensive for the taxpayers. That seems like an adverse consequence of what was intended by this. So I do know Mr. Carlson talked to me, and I have an amendment here that I understand Representative Shumper and Keith Carlson and the counties worked out together, because they had a concern that there was a pipeline project in Blue Earth that could be affected by this project, and I see them nodding in the back, and we wanted to make sure that that wouldn't happen. But, you know, I don't know what else they do here, Representative Simpson, but I do think, set aside Representative Shumper in this issue, is this Houston County? I'm not sure. What county is it?
Yes, Houston.
Houston County. You know, let's just take any county, your county or mine. I mean, we would not want our county commissioners picking more expensive bonding options for our residents because they didn't want us to vote on it. So that I think would be problematic for any of us. So I do think Representative Shumper is trying to address a legitimate concern, but you know, it is in the will of everybody here on what they want to do next. So I appreciate that, Representative Simpson. Representative De La Forest.
Madam Chair, thanks. It happens. Problem you're describing. It happens. I'm living with it right now. In any case, Representative Shumper, I just had a question on line 16. Your reverse referendum asked for signatures equal to 10% of the votes cast. I'm wondering just the rationale behind 10%. Is that consistent with other reverse referendum numbers and statute?
Madam Chair, Representative De La Forest, actually it isn't. For a reverse referendum on the GEO bonds right now, it's 5%. I guess I initially thought of that had I thought about it earlier today when it was drafted. I might have made it consistent with the earlier 5%. I thought that 10% might be a little higher threshold. It might be a little more compelling on the part of you all to agree with this and approve it. I'm certainly open to putting it at 5%, and I think that's certainly adequate. If you want to offer that as a friendly amendment, I'd certainly accept it.
Yeah, sure, that's what I asked. I'm very friendly to subdivision 3, and so in order at least to get some discussion going, I would move an oral amendment then on line 16 to strike 10 and insert 5, depending upon the feelings of my colleagues here in the tax committee, but I'll move the amendment.
Representative De La Forest moves an oral amendment. Representative De La Forest, can you repeat it one more time?
Madam Chair, it's on line 16. I would strike the word 10 and insert the word 5. So it would be 5% of the votes cast instead of 10. It would lower the threshold for a reverse referendum.
Are you working off the DE1?
I am working off the
okay,
DE1.
Okay, I was looking at the bill. I'm thinking, where is he seeing this? Okay. Off the DE1 amendment. Striking 10 and inserting 5. Discussion to the amendment. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question for, I'm not sure whether Representative Shumper can ask this, but what is the cost to the county of putting on a reverse referendum?
I have no idea. I suppose it somewhat depends on when they do it. You know, I would guess someplace between $5,000 and $10,000. I don't have any idea.
Representative Wolfslager and then Paulson.
Chair members, Representative Shumper. I mean, I'm concerned about this because honestly, if Wabasha County had thought about this, I think they would have been here 2 months ago. Because it is really unpopular to build a jail, and a lot of people don't want it to happen. And you know, I guess luckily in the case of this county that I represent, they were able to work together and scale it back. But I mean, I'm very concerned about this because Representative Wachinski.
We both have difficult names. You have difficult names. Still there?
Okay. Sorry. And, you know, jails are unpopular, right. And we could name a couple other things like okay. that. And I, in the case of Wabasha County, being the second oldest jail in the state, it is the second oldest in the state because there's so many people in the county mm-hmm. that kept voting people out of office because they didn't want the decision to be made. And finally, we got a group in that, you know, had the courage to do it. And so.
Madam Chair. If I can read.
Representative
Summer,
yes.
Representative Wolfslager, I sort of agree with what you're saying. I think everyone recognizes that jails aren't necessarily popular. But I can assure you that in Houston County, I think there's a very strong consensus that we need a new jail situation. Mm-hmm. I've been to several of these meetings. Bob has been to every single meeting for the last year. And, you know, I think we all agree there's a consensus. I think the right plan will get overwhelming approval in Houston County. As far as this, it seems to me that this gives us a little more bargaining authority, a little more bargaining leverage. I mean, again, it's a reverse referendum. It's not an automatic referendum. We don't have to present the petitions with 1,200 names. If the county board decides suddenly to put forth a little different plan, that's a little more widely acceptable. So the jail per se is not the issue here. The need for a jail is not per se the issue.
Representative Paulson?
Madam Chair, just to the amendment, I would support the amendment if Representative Chumper is willing to, you know, make the modification based on consistency with current law. I would support the amendment. So.
Certainly, Madam Chair.
Representative DeLaForest.
That's what I was going to say, Madam Chair. I offered this merely for the fact that this creates consistency. As I think about our current public policy, we have a perverse incentive to go with what is frequently a more expensive option, but it's politically expedient. And so it seems to me this is a real common sense amendment that Representative Chumper brought forth. I'm trying to make it just consistent here. So when local units of government, counties in this case, think about how to finance these things, we try to reduce the politics as much as possible and have it based on public policy. So we just got a perverse incentive right now.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering if there's been any experience with these reverse referendum and how the general election, you know, there's a pretty big drop-off between the presidential election and other, the off-year elections, and I'm just wondering how that impacts the number of petitions. I mean, obviously it would be quite different. 5% in one year is very different than 5% in the next, and it seems to me that that might drive timing on projects or could drive unanticipated consequence in regards to that. I don't know if the counties have any opinion on that at all, or
they're looking up there to see if they have, we're seeing if they have an opinion. But if I may, Representative Broad, I think it would be instructive to ask Mr. Michael to give us a minute or two primer on which sets of local bonding currently have reverse referendums now, and at what level of voters, and at what elections, Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in general, regular GO bonds are subject to a positive referendum requirement, and so most instances where you issue just straight plain vanilla general obligation bonds, the voters, it has to be submitted to the voters. County CIP bonds and the city counterparts to that program, the city capital improvement bonds, are subject to the reverse referenda. I don't know the extent. Representative Broad is right that obviously the number of signatures that you have to get will fluctuate depending upon what election was the last election. I don't know. There's some of the practitioners here. I've heard practitioners tell me that these reverse referendum provisions rarely are used. In other words, they typically propose these projects, and the Houston County situation is somewhat out of an anomaly. In most instances, they go forward. The county CIP program was enacted, if I recall correctly, in either 1987 or 1988, as a result of the then Tax Committee Chair Gordon Voss being frustrated with numerous requests for special legislation by individual counties, larger metropolitan counties that were building large jail projects, and felt that they could not submit it to the voters and pass it. And so this option of doing this, the capital improvement plan with a reverse referendum, was thought to be the solution that would allow them to go ahead and issue regular general obligation bonds with their lower interest rates and in most cases not be subject to a vote. So that's the sort of the history on how this provision developed. It was in response to counties like Anoka and Hennepin and Ramsey asking for special legislation to issue general obligation bonds for correctional facilities without a referendum.
Madam Speaker, I'm just trying to figure out how it impacts decisions. So I guess I can't walk it through right now. Maybe I'll just keep thinking about that a little bit.
Mr. Michael, where else do we have reverse referendums? Ms. Representative Milbert used to be a really big fan. And he buried them in a bunch of places. But I do think it's good for us to think about the roles of reverse referendums. I mean, they're generally preserved for things like this that are difficult for voters. We do all kinds of bonding where we don't have voters passing them or even allowing reverse referendums. So the measure of democracy changes depending on what you're talking about. We do lots of things. For example, we have our state bonding bill. We pass it. We don't put it on the ballot for Minnesotans to vote on. We just pass it as the elected body. So, you know, there's a lot of disparate treatment throughout.
Madam Chair, that's a good idea. Thank you.
Yes.
So Barry's got to go.
Pardon?
That was a good idea. Thank you.
Yeah, I was going to say, while we're looking there, yep. I know we had one a number of years ago across the school district on an operating level where they had a petition and then it was placed on the ballot. I don't remember the detail quite how that came about, but there must have been some division of the law.
Yeah.
While that ended up being a petition just post vote, the other time we used one of the most important drivers of schools for a course where we put in the lawn. It could be a reverse referendum, but nobody ever petitioned for doing three. That was for a
bonding. Well, and as Mr. Michael's looking, I mean, I just think it's good for everybody to think about when people feel like you have to have a vote on everything because that's democracy. Actually, we mostly don't. We have the elected officials take those votes, and we don't put public works projects in cities and counties on the ballot. That's actually quite uncommon, but at times we do, and then at times we have the hybrid, which is the reverse referendum. But I do think the core is the issue that Representative DeForest raised, which is adverse or perverse incentives to get to have elected bodies go do things that cost more to the taxpayers because they're trying to avoid a vote. I don't think we'd want that to happen, so I think we need to do something here. Mr. Michael, do you have more thoughts on reverse referendum?
Other than the capital improvement, the city street reconstruction authorization is subject to a reverse referendum, and there have been a fair number of instances where special laws have gone through, and they've had either for levies or for debt for individual projects where the legislature has put a reverse referendum on as a way. Frequently the local unit comes in and asks for an exemption from the positive referendum requirement, and the compromise is to subject them to a reverse referendum, which, you know, occurs if you have a lot of active community opposition, but in general not typically. But other than those, the capital improvement and street reconstruction, I can't think of any other debt or levy instances in general law.
Representative Solver?
Madam Chair, I got a question to ask from somebody in council. I think there's a controversy, as I understand it, in Houston County. But I think we're adopting not a law for Houston County, but for the state. And I have a little bit of difficulty in that because, as we state, county jails are not popular. And I know that we have in here a county proposal to lease or rent. And sometimes the county boards make a decision to go together and form one county, in fact, is I think part of my legislative district, the county was in Brainerd, Crow Wing County, and Aiken County, instead of building a jail at the time, proposed to rent it. And that became controversial. So they ended up building a jail, and that became controversial. And neither one of them would have passed. I feel more comfortable in passing if there is a controversy in a particular county that needs to have a reverse referendum. I feel more comfortable in trying to deal with that than to have a general law apply to every county where there may not be the ability for county boards to make the decision. As I look in the current law, there must have been somebody that crafted something that excluded Ramsey County for some reason. So I just want to caution people, and I want to know why we're not dealing with a particular controversial issue in one particular place and not affecting a statewide law that may not the rest of us to have that kind of controversy.
Representative Liebling, Hillstrom, Simpson. Representative Liebling.
Just to that point.
To that point,
just to that point, I think that's kind of where I was going from the get-go on this, too. I think that if we're going to open this up, we're going to change state policy statewide, I think we need to be a little careful. If we want to do something for Houston County, then I think that's fine. But I think we really have to make sure, as stated just a moment ago, that we don't take this to a different level, that we'll open this up for 87 counties. So I think we need to be careful.
Truth here, the reason it's statewide is because I requested it that way. Representative Schumper was doing it just for himself. And
I don't want to fight the chair.
Well, we can let the counties tell us how they think about it, because Representative Solberg, I did not think of that situation, and that's a legitimate situation. But as I thought about Representative Schumper's problem and thought, why would we let any county tax their taxpayers more than they needed to avoid the reverse referendum, it didn't make sense to me. So maybe there are these situations where you said a couple merge, and then we would take some flexibility away, so maybe we should just do Houston. I don't know. But I don't want Representative Schumper to be blamed for my actions. That's all. Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And yeah, this is kind of a perplexing problem for all of these reasons, but I just wanted to go back a little bit. One of the testifiers said something about taxation without representation, and I know that Representative Schumper probably doesn't agree with that like I don't. I mean, we have to remember that these are elected officials, so it's not taxation without representation. But that made me also wonder, was this an issue before the last election? And, what would give a little comfort to this is if it was an issue and you elected some of these county commissioners, knowing their positions on this, you know, that would be. But if it comes up after an election and suddenly people want to do something that nobody's had a chance to weigh in on at the ballot box, then it's a little different.
Representative Schumper.
Well, Representative Liebling, it was not much of an issue in the last election. The chief advocate for this ran for state senate, and I might say he lost badly, perhaps due to his advocacy for this. But I think that the county board has not firmed up its financing plans until just recently, and I think that we always thought. And I'm sure I can speak for Bob and Fred here, that they always thought that we would be able to convince the county board to, and we fully were not aware of this leasing option until about a month or so ago. We just felt eventually they'd get around to putting forth an option on the table for financing the project that would allow for the reverse referendum or a direct referendum. And so, if you couldn't convince the county board to come up with a different proposal or a different plan, then that was always there. That was our thinking. That's why they actually went around and collected these names late last summer. We never thought we would be in the situation where the county board would try to circumvent the referendum. It never occurred to me. I know Bob hired an attorney and had it looked into, and apparently not quite as good an attorney as we could have found. But, we never thought we'd be in the situation where the county board would try to circumvent the referendum. As simple as that.
Representative Kilstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a couple of questions. It's my understanding that the Department of Corrections is the one that has informed the county that they needed to build a new jail facility. They're going to continue to house offenders there. I'm one, if you know if that's true. And number two, in the event they don't build a new facility, what then will the county have to do with their offenders? Will they have to lease space from another county, or what will happen?
Representative Schumper.
I'd be happy to speak to that, Representative Hillstrom. The jail that we have is old. They stuck a lot of money into it, and it's still working fine. It's not what they'd like to have, and I don't blame them. I think they deserve to have something newer, safer. But the jail, as far as the way it's working right now, it has not been condemned. They haven't had the problem that I think they had in Wabasha. Our jail is still working fine, but they do want the county to come up with a plan, and they've been working on this for, well, I find out now, probably 15 years. As far as the jail working, it's working fine. It's not like they have to be out of it in 6 months. They haven't given them a deadline on when they have to be out.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that is, the Department of Corrections has told them that they want them to come up with a plan, but they have not given them a deadline for when it is that the plan has to be completed.
That's correct.
Other questions? We still have the De La Forest amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion to the De La Forest oral amendment, which was on the DE1 amendment, page or line 1, line 16, changing 10 to 5? If not, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay.
No.
Amendment is adopted. Representative Shumpert, did you want to offer the other amendment that you worked on with Mr. Carlson, or thoughts on Representative Colbert's concern and others who said, well, statewide versus just their own? You know, this is we're going to do to honor this public finance bill in just a little bit here, so we can do it either way. You know?
Well, you know, having had the discussion with the chair here, there seems to be some concern and problem, and somewhat problematic about having it just apply to the county, I guess. With the help of Mr. Michaels, I tried to craft a bill that had the smallest, narrowest impact, understanding your concern about affecting other counties. And also in my conversations with Mr. Carlson, who represents some of the counties, I'm very open to grandfathering in any projects that are in process or making any other exceptions that you all would feel would be appropriate. You know, I think I've kind of stumbled into a situation here that the chair has correctly described. If Houston County can choose an option to avoid referendum, even though they choose an option that's more expensive, other counties may be tempted to do that also. And so if you feel a need to correct that, that's fine. If you have an idea on how I can narrow this up to just Houston County, that would be wonderful with me. I'm open to that. But I can't come up with it, to be honest. And that was my initial intent, to be honest.
Well, Representative Shumpert, do you want to, because we can change it in the public finance bill one way or another, do you want to offer the Blue Earth Amendment?
Yes.
So keep your state language in for now and deal with the issue that Representative Mr. Carlson raised. Who represents many of the counties, and he was aware of this one in the pipeline, and because they're in the process, if I understand it correctly, of letting the bonds right now, they didn't want the rules to change midstream, which in general, when we change things like this or other things in the tax year, we generally have done that. We have tried to not disrupt something that's underway. So,
And Madam Chair, I had a conversation just a little bit ago with Representative Brainerd from Mankato. This is in her district, and when I explained that I was willing to do this amendment, she was very happy about that and supportive of the amendment. So.
Okay. So did you want to?
Yes. Could I move this?
Yes, please.
Move.
I
don't think it has a number.
Oh,
does it?
I'm sorry. I have to move it.
Yes.
Why do I have to move it?
Because I'm a member of the committee.
Oh, you're not on this committee?
No, I'm not. Unfortunately. Can you correct that for me?
Yeah.
You finally noticed.
Representative Shumpert, maybe you should be. If I consider this long and not know that, that's a big problem. I will move the amendment that is being passed out now, and this is it doesn't have a number. This is JM over in the corner there, and that is to make an exception for a law enforcement center and related facilities for Blue Earth County, and you should have it in front of you now. So that's going to make sure that one project is not affected by this bill if this bill goes forward. Discussion of the amendment. If not, all those in favor say aye. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Wolfsinger.
Could Mr. Carlson speak for Wabasha County?
Sure.
Regarding their jail.
Mr. Carlson, come on down and tell us about Blue Earth and Wabasha while you're down here. Well, and Mr. Carlson, people are ticking off counties. And between Mr. Carlson and Mr. Matthews, I think they represent all counties in the state of Minnesota. So why don't we just hear what the folks who actually represent all of our counties think about all this?
Madam Chair, members, I'm going to let Mr. Matthews speak to the Wabasha Jail. With regards to the amendment before you, Blue Earth County has already let $25 million of construction contracts for a facility that they anticipate will ultimately cost them about $35 million. They have not bid the bonds yet. They are issuing bonds in the neighborhood of $15 million and paying cash for the rest of the facility. They have been in the process of this for over 7 years, and so I very much appreciate the author and the chair's willingness to offer this grandfather amendment. I'll turn things over to Mr. Matthews.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wolfsager, I'm not an expert on Wabasha County specifically, but it's my understanding that when these issues arise, the Department of Corrections does require counties to maintain jails to a certain standard of service. And I think there's been a little bit of confusion among some of the citizens in this case, thinking that the county board's going about trying to upgrade their jails because they think they need a shiny jail cell or higher quality facilities. But in fact, that's not a local decision to be made. The local decision is really the siting and then how you're going to pay for it. And as Representative Hillstrom alluded to, it's really difficult for our local elected officials to walk a fine line between making everybody happy. Not everybody's going to be happy with the final decision. The Association of Minnesota Counties has some major concerns with this bill. There's a number of issues in cities and counties around the state that people don't like. And if the state legislature wants to deal with every unpopular issue in every jurisdiction, I think that's the road we're starting to head down. And, with all respect, I hadn't seen this language until just today, but I think even 5 or 10%, regardless of what the threshold is, you're just opening the doors for folks to second-guess elected officials. I mean, we don't have reverse referendums on another number of decisions made here. Your city councils, I just think this is thin ice, and I know our folks have major concerns. And I don't know how many commissioners were reelected in last fall's election, but I know at least two had to be on the ballot, maybe even three. And I don't know what the results were. I could get that for you in the future, but we do have major concerns about this.
Thank you for that. Why do I call you that? Mr. Carlson. I don't. It's because Representative Carlson's right here. And so I looked at you and called you. Apologize for that. Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, do you want to say some general comments right now? I was trying to limit my response to...
Sure, that's fine. I think Representative Carlson actually does have a... Okay. Representative Carlson, can I just ask, was your question to Mr. Matthews? Or do you want to wait for both of them?
Either one of them. Yes, I can wait.
Okay. Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to add to... Mr. Matthews, general comments on this legislation. Again, I appreciate making the exception, but the issue, a broader issue, has already been identified here. You're creating a statewide solution to what is a local problem. And you've also, I think, acknowledged the problem that exists for counties in financing what other facilities that don't have a big constituency, jails, laws, law enforcement centers, whatever. You further somewhat acknowledge, and Mr. Matthews has gone into some details of the problems that we have in coming up with facilities that will meet the mandates of the Department of Corrections, frankly, mandates that you have placed on us in recent years by the short-term offenders being one that has required us statewide to add over 315 beds to our facilities to accommodate the additional offenders that used to be housed in state facilities, but now we have to house them, to meet the mandates that we have to provide all the facilities for the state courts within each of our jurisdictions, and to further meet the rules of the courts themselves in terms of the convenience of both the offender and their legal counsel, as well as the prosecution. Right now, there is a rule being considered by the Supreme Court regarding the use of interactive TV for some court procedures. And quite frankly, the courts are being very, very narrow in their application of this technology. We like to use it for arraignment hearings so that the judge does not necessarily have to be in the facility. But what the courts are proposing in their current rules is unless the judge has to travel from another county for those arraignments, we cannot use ITV. So that means that our jails have to be convenient to the courtrooms in order for us to make the transport of those individuals and keep those individuals secure. So we're basically being come at all sides in terms of the various costs that we have to deal with and mandates that we have to deal with in financing these facilities. Unfortunately, one of the ways of meeting those financial obligations is the type of arrangement that is occurring in Houston County where an HRA or possibly an EDA or a port authority will issue revenue bonds to finance these facilities. And that gets to the final problem. You've already acknowledged in the past that it's difficult to finance these facilities and have given us some exceptions from the requirement for referendums. The problem is the threshold that you give us for those authorities, the capital improvement programs that Mr. Michael went through, and separate authorities for jails only are not enough. So we are frankly forced to use these other devices to get built what are unpopular facilities that wouldn't have a constituency if we had to go through referendum. Consequently, in conclusion, this is, from county's perspective, a bad bill and puts further handcuffs on us in meeting what is largely obligations that are forced upon us by the state, as well as the federal government in some instances.
Representative Carlson?
Madam Chair, I'm reading the amendment that is before us. The question I have, are we sure that there aren't other counties that would, in addition to Blue Earth, fall into this timeline? The reason I asked the question, and I'm sitting here trying to recall the particulars, but Anoka County is somewhere in the process of developing a law enforcement center, and I think it may even be a cooperative with some other counties. The reason I'm aware of it, they did ask for some state bonding to go into a lab, but that was just one part of the building. There were other components into that, what I'll call law enforcement center. I think that was mainly what it was to be. And I'm not sure what their timeline is and whether this would impact them or not, or whether they would need an exemption. There may be others that are in other parts of the state.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, you're correct that there are a number of counties that are in the process of expanding or building replacement facilities. I have had a solicitation out to my membership as to whether or not this affects them, and quite frankly, you know, I didn't give them a lot of description of what this actually did, so in part, some of it may be the fact that I didn't get a response from other than Blue Earth may be just because they didn't understand the impact of this language. But this is not a situation that's been unique to Houston County or Blue Earth County. Stearns County used exactly the same device to build its law enforcement center several years ago. It's possible. I simply don't know right now whether or not Anoka County or some other county, but it is quite possible that, in fact, would be the case because of the constraints within the current CIP program or the separate jail bonding authority provision.
Just a quick question. I know you represent some counties, but not all. So, for example, would Anoka County be one that you represent? Would you have actually gotten feedback on that one?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, Anoka County is one of my members, but as I said, I've had this issue out for comment a relatively short time. I have not heard back from them. It's not clear, absent the response, whether or not they were planning on using this device to finance it, but the possibility exists. That's all I can tell you right now.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, if I could just add, I think every county in the state is at some phase in the process of reviewing whether or not their facilities are adequate. You know, some might be 10 or 12 years down the road, but I think this is something that everybody's become aware of as the level of offenders has increased and laws have become tougher. So whether or not they're at the same phase as Blue Earth, everybody's going to run into this wall at some point, and it's going to be a real tough situation, I think, for our folks.
Madam Chair.
Representative
Schumper. Well, you know, I was just going to comment. To my knowledge, much of the project in Houston County is not a part of state mandates. It's additional office space for the court administrator. I can't believe that would be mandated. And, you know, the biggest problem is the location of it, and the location is not necessarily mandated by the state here. You know, and again, I would simply point out that two of the roughly four or five options already either have a direct referendum or a reverse referendum. So, you know, I think what we're going to see is that all counties are going to drive towards the whole, the exception where they don't have to have a referendum just to, I guess, for whatever reasons they have. So.
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, can I just comment specifically on the issue of providing facilities for the court administrator? Under the court takeover legislation that was completed back in 2001, our obligation remains to provide all facilities for the courts. Ultimately, the courts could potentially order us to provide specific facilities, but usually these are the results of negotiations. But in the Houston County situation, the Blue Earth County situation, Washington County is just in the process of building a new law enforcement center that does incorporate new courtrooms. So, you know, it may not be pursuant to a court order, but we are obligated to provide those facilities. We have to provide them at the county seat, and because of the security issues that I just briefly alluded to in the arraignment of frequently dangerous criminals and the fact that the courts have so far been very contrite in allowing us to use ITV, its location of the jail facility vis-a-vis the court facility is pretty constrained, so there's not a lot of options in that regard.
Yes. And Madam Chair, if I could, I keep hearing over and over again that the Houston County Board has circumvented the reverse referendum process as if there was some sort of conspiracy behind this. I was unable to get the Houston County Board to come here today, and I think that, you know, if this is the road we're going to go down, I think they would like an opportunity to speak to the committee. I did get an email from them expressing concerns about this legislation, and I think that in the end, you know, the folks on county boards, whether it's Houston County or Hennepin County or anyone in between, I think these folks make decisions based on what they need to do in between the mandates from the state and balancing the needs of their taxpayers. And to be honest, it's become a very fine line over the last several years, and it's a very tough job. And I think to second-guess them is somewhat, I just think, I don't want to say insult, I think it's too strong, but I think it's disconcerting to our membership that we're here today discussing this because we don't maybe agree with the decision that was made at the local level.
Representative LaForest.
Well, Madam Chair, this is the other side of this. I mean, let's keep this in perspective. It's a reverse referendum. It isn't a referendum. It's a reverse referendum. The statistics and history will tell you that they're used infrequently, and that's as it should be. But there are situations. I mean, just because it's a jail doesn't mean that the right decision will always be made in terms of the process that is used or the amount of money that is spent. I know Representative Abrams used to talk about this, Madam Chair. And for example, you look at us. All 134 of us are on the ballot every 2 years. Decisions are made that the voters don't like. There is a swift accountability that is levied on us. For example, a county board, if they make a particular decision, generally that folks don't like, it could be 4 years until a majority of that board stands before the voters to face accountability for the decisions that they make. And so it's very, very difficult sometimes when a poor decision is made by a city council or a county board for voters to have redress. They might be mad at the next election, which may be 2 years down the road. Okay, so they got rid of two of the five that made the bad decision. There's still three left potentially. So that's why I think this strikes the common sense middle ground. There's a reverse referendum procedure. It's another step of accountability, but it still requires a lot of hard work by the folks who might be disappointed in the decision. I think it strikes the ground. It's not a referendum. It's a reverse referendum. And I think Representative Schumper has got middle ground compromise legislation as it's presented right now.
We moved the Blue Earth Amendment. Further discussion to the Blue Earth Amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion or testimony on this? Because we'll lay it over and it's going to come back when we mark up the omnibus public finance. So further discussion? If not, thank you, Representative Schumper. If I want to stay around, we're going to lay over your bill for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you. Members, I just want to, but I do just want to go through just a couple things. I have my bill up, which should just take a couple minutes, and then I'll come back and sit here and we'll do the omnibus public finance bill. But there's a number. First, we need a motion to approve the minutes. Is that right?
So moved.
And Representative Hillstrom moves the minutes. All the discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Or motion is, motion prevails. And then I want to point out a couple things in your packets, and they are things that various people asked us to give to members over the time, over the time frame. There's something on the NRP neighborhoods for Minneapolis that was sent to us from an associate professor at Harvard. He wanted us to have that, and that's available to you. There's something from me. I raised this Good Jobs First group when we heard the Mall of America testimony in Thompson West, and this is there's some information from them on those subsidies. And then thirdly, there's something in your packet where a resident in the St. Cloud area asked that all members of the tax committee receive his letter to us. So those are all in there. And with that, let's see, which one am I doing? Thank you. I'd like to move House File 1005, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, members, this bill of mine allows for cities that are struggling with how to pay for post-employment benefits due to GASB 45, they would be able to bond for some of their post-employment benefits. And so that's pretty much it. And
do you have a testifier?
Madam Chair, members, I'm Keith Carlson with the Minnesota Intercounty Association. I have worked on this subject with the schools, the cities, and representatives of the Public Finance Association. I just want to briefly take a step back and tell you what GASB 45 was. You had the issue before you at the previous meeting in Representative Hillstrom's House File 1160, which basically set up the structure to allow local governments to comply with this new accounting rule that says you can no longer account for the cost of post-employment benefits, generally retiree health care, on a pay-as-you-go basis. You must account for those costs and those liabilities on a pay-as-the-benefit-accrues or is earned basis. As a result of that standard, which took effect on January 1st of this year for the larger governments, on their next financial statement, the larger local governments and subsequently the smaller ones over the next 2 years will recognize these liabilities for the first times on their financial statements. And that will force them to start buying down those liabilities. Otherwise, they risk an adverse rating by their bond rating agencies and potentially higher interest costs on any debt instruments that they issue. One way to quickly capitalize these accounts and start working towards taking care of this new liability is issuing bonds. The other thing that issuing bonds does is that for some with particularly large GASB 45 liability, they don't have the political wherewithal to start funding it immediately because the liability is quite large for some local governments in Minnesota. Bonds allow them to phase into what ultimately will have to be a tax increase to pay for these by spreading out these costs over the terms of the bonds. And this is basically what the legislation provides for and what we're looking for in this. We don't anticipate it's going to be used very often, but it is a tool just as is the present authority to issue bonds to fund the deficiencies in pension funds. With that, Madam Chair, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from members? Representative Daffy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, I apologize. I came in towards the end of your presentation. You explained this is something that hopefully would be used infrequently. my city bonds for pension debt. And kind of where I've come down on my city is the only thing stupider than bonding for pension debt is not bonding for pension debt. But neither is a very good option. How do we put some controls on this to ensure that, with no disrespect intended, our local units of government aren't busy doing stupid things because, as you described, it's politically easier than raising taxes? I'm concerned about the going forward impact on local budgets if they get into a festival of bonding for pension debt.
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative Abney, the specific situations that you identified was, I believe, with Minneapolis's police fund, where due to a new actuarial valuation, the obligation of the city to fund the unfunded accrued liability rose dramatically. Okay, and absent issuing bonds, what the city would have had to done was to increase its levy significantly. And so, from their perspective, and I would concur on that, by issuing bonds, it allowed them to basically amortize these costs over the term of the bond. And again, that's exactly the same sort of potential authority or structure that those local governments with substantial OPEB liability would possibly conclude would fit their needs. Offsetting them is, one, the fact that it costs money to issue bonds. Two, there is interest that you pay on those bonds. So it's basically a very complicated financial analysis that they have to go through. Is the present value of the debt service on those bonds less than the present value of paying for them immediately via property taxes? If it comes out on the side of issuing bonds, they may do that. I think you have to grant the local government some, cut them some slack that they know what is best for their citizens, for their taxpayers' bottom line. I don't think this is going to be used frequently. I know of only one entity within my 13-member organization that's considering it, and as of the most recent discussions I've had with them, they're basically backing away from it as they're getting more revised actuarial evaluations that maybe they can manage it without issuing the bonds. That's all I can tell you at this point.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you for the comments. And as I understand it, you described the city of Minneapolis' situation correctly, which is why I said the only thing stupider than issuing the bonds would have been not issuing the bonds. And I recognize sometimes you end up with two lousy choices and you got to pick the least lousy of the two. My concern remains, and it may be worth further discussions with the author or consideration. I'm not sure when I'll have time to do any of that, but because I also know, you know, from my own city's experience, we've kind of tipped ourselves into some budget challenges. We're no Rogers, don't get me wrong, but cities will do things that are, as all elected officials and bodies will, that are perhaps short-term smart but long-term stupid, and we've rarely figured out a good way to rein them in, and this opened up another opportunity to do that, and I'm concerned. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I can just make one more response. I would say that there is one constraint that you should recognize, and the only bonds that they can issue is equal to the actuarial liability of these obligations. They can't create a phantom debt or liability. It's what their actuary tells them, and the GASB 45 that I went through myself earlier, they have to do that every 2 years for the larger jurisdictions and every 3 years for those jurisdictions with 200 or less employees. So they are constantly getting revisions as to what their liability is, and they cannot go over that threshold, in any bonds that they issue.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to testify for or against the bill? With that, we'll lay this over for possible inclusion in the public finance omnibus bill. Thank you.
Okay, so thank you, Representative Wolfsager. We're going to do the marking up the omnibus public finance bill now, and Mr. Michael's going to walk through it. We've heard all the bills. I made some decisions on what is in here, and members who don't like provisions can move to take them out. We'll vote on that, or if you want to put provisions in that aren't here, we'll do that too. So, Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are only a moderate number of changes from the original bill that was put forward by the Public Finance Institute. I'll really try to highlight those. Section 1 is the same. That's the eliminating the requirement to collateralize accrued interest. Section 2, again, is the same provision relating to the school district certificates. The Section 3, the mail ballot provision, is unchanged. Sections 4, 5, and 6 and 7 related to town subordinate service districts. There are a couple of changes. The bill is originally has introduced authorized the town board to establish a subordinate service district without petition by the landowners. This changes that, so it would be the town meeting, the actual town itself, that has to establish the subordinate service district, not the board of the town. The second thing that's the second change that's made in these subordinate service district provisions, both for the towns and later for the counties, is as proposed there was an exemption from the referendum provision for GO debt, and that's eliminated. For the town, they could satisfy that by having the town meeting approve the debt. For the county, it would have to be submitted to the voters. Sections 9 and let's see, section 9 is the capital note provision with regard to software. That's not changed from the original bill. Section 10 is the authorization for counties to issue bonds for subordinate service districts, and that again has the one change to delete the referendum exemption. Sections 11 and 12 are Representative Mullery's bill that increases the area in which the Hennepin County HRE can operate so that it includes the area of those handful of municipalities that had HRAs before. I think it was 1971. And that's, I think it's Minneapolis, Robbinsdale, Hopkins, and maybe another. The bill summary lists the cities that are affected. St. Louis Park. Section 13 is from the original bill. It adds the computer software to the Hennepin County capital notes provision. Sections 14 and 15. Sections 14 and 15 essentially repeal the sunset on the capital notes for software. Section 16 is the provision that adds residential property as a qualifying use in a special service district. Section 17 is the municipal gas utility provision. Section 18 is Representative Hillstrom's bill authorizing the trust for post-employment benefits, and this is in the version that was passed as part of the state government finance bill, with the exception that the reporting requirement that was in that bill is delayed by 2 years, and I believe there's going to be an amendment to delay that by an additional 2 years to 2010. That language is on page 12, line 3. Section 19 is Representative Hornstein's Metropolitan Council Transit Bonding Authority. Sections 20 and 22 are the Gubby Bond for Transportation and Transit Projects. Section 21 is the authorization of the bill that you just heard, the chair's bill to authorize issuing bonds to fund post-employment health benefits liabilities. And Section 23 is the second section of that. Section 24 is from the original bill on street reconstruction. And Section 25, again, is a provision from Representative Hillstrom's bill on the post-retirement or post-employment health benefits. Section 26 is Representative Dill's bill. And Section 27 is the Winstead exception for the bonding. I think it was Representative Szymanski.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Michael? What's in or what's out? Amendments from anyone on what's in or what's out? Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, and perhaps Mr. Michael can assist. Can we talk about Section 16, the addition of residential to special service districts? And I'm not moving to delete it. I've got concerns, but I'm not articulate enough to either bring forward the concerns clearly or have a solution. I think I'm concerned that we've got increasing mix of residents and CI property, and that's all good, particularly in our downtowns. And this may be positive, but I'm also concerned about do we run the risk of just sticking the residential property with the cost of a special services district that goes to the benefit of the business community as well? Mr. Michael, can you talk to me about these things? For a moment.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, and members of the committee, just a little bit of background. The special service district law is a law that allows upon petition a city to set up an area of the city in which a higher level of services or capital improvements will be provided. So, for example, you could provide additional street maintenance and sweeping or additional policing or something like that. And then additional charges or levies are imposed on the properties that are in that area. The law now requires that 50% or more of the market value of the property has to be commercial and industrial to qualify for this. So it's largely a case of business property opting for this sort of additional level of service. What this amendment does is to expand that to allow residential. And the proponents of this have argued that with the advent of more sort of mixed-use developments, I believe that, some of this is sort of the new, the retail on the first level, residential on the second level, that essentially they want the flexibility to expend, to not just expend, but to impose the tax or impose the charges on those residential properties or properties that are both commercial and residential, and not simply on the businesses. Now, one of the things that goes with these special service districts is that there's a veto provision. And essentially, if 35% of the landowners, and that's measured either by land area, so it would be measuring the square footage of the land, or by the value, I think it's market value, I don't know, Karen might be able to correct me, I think it's the market value of the property. If 35% of the owners opt to veto this special service district, they can do that. And so there's some protection. I'm not sure what these residential developments, I mean, if it's a rental situation, then it would be the property owner that would have that veto, not the tenants, obviously. But if you have condo or townhouse type developments, it would be the owners. So there is, you know, that there is some protection for these properties as to, you know, whether or not they can opt out of this if they don't like it.
Madam Chair?
Representative Gavin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Michael, tied to this, a question about Section 6 on page 3 about creation by the town. When we first went through this, I thought there was some discussion that led me to think this was only townships, but I don't think that makes sense. Who does that apply to, and what's the rationale for allowing local units of government to do this directly rather than relying on the petition process?
Mr. Mike.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, this provision, this Section 6, does relate only to towns. There's a sort of parallel provision for counties that goes along with this. I think the rationale originally was that if you're going to create this area where there's a special tax or charges imposed with a higher level of service, that it really ought to depend upon the owners, a majority of the owners of the property in that area asking for it, and not simply the town board or the county board by fiat deciding to do this, and then the onus being on those owners to sort of get out of it. The proponent, I'm not sure about the exact rationale for the proponents coming forward. This original proposal just let the town board, so that's the elected governing body, to approve it. Now, and of course, most of you knowing sort of your basic civics about how towns run, it's, you know, the last form of direct democracy in the U.S. where they actually every year have an annual meeting where all of the voters are able to show up, and that's where the budget and the tax levy and all those sorts of things are approved. Most of the fundamental decisions by the town are approved. But what the bill now says is that at that town meeting, the town can approve a special, so it's no longer the board, it's the town meeting. But it doesn't provide as much protection as the existing law does for the owners in the area where the special charges would be imposed, where now the burden is on them to actually sign a petition and come to the town and ask for this.
What, one last question, if I may, Madam Chair. Mr. Michaels, does this apply to cities of the first class?
Mr. Mike.
I'm not as clear as I would like to be on the meaning of the term town in this.
No. The subordinate service district law is literally for towns, which are unincorporated areas. Now, the special service district provision, which we were discussing before, that applies in cities, and that would apply in the cities of the first class, and I believe the city of Minneapolis actually has, at least Karen's showing me the table, they have 12 special service districts in Minneapolis. So this is, they're the biggest user of the special service district law that we're aware of as of a few years ago or a couple of years ago.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike.
Representative Avenue, sure, you look puzzled there still. Further?
Well, you know, English is my first language, but every now and again, the difference between special service district and subordinate service district, and towns versus cities of the first class, and you know, the wires just start crossing, and I think I understand things, and then it turns out maybe I don't, and I'm going to have to go back and read your bill a little bit further. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, so House File, I'm going to move House File 2268 because it's not even before us, so now it is, and then I'm going to move my author's amendment that Mr. Michael has gone through. It's actually the delete all, and it is the 19 pages long. So I'll move the H2268 DE1 amendment to get it in front of us. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The delete all amendment is adopted. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wondered if Mr. Michael could just real briefly talk about these sections. I guess it's 9 and 15 that have to do with capital notes for software. Could you just kind of tell us what's going on there? Thanks. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, this 2 years ago, I believe it was, after a long period of requests that were denied by the legislature, the legislature enacted this law that allows the use of these capital notes or certificates of indebtedness to finance not just computer hardware but software as well. And there was a sunset put on that, that's July 1st of this year. This provision repeals that sunset requirement, and so it would become permanent that cities and counties could incur debt to buy computer software. And I think, you know, one of the reasons why the legislature was sort of very reluctant in the past to grant this request was there was a perception by a fair number of members, well, that software has a fairly short useful life and you're incurring debt to buy something that could be obsolete in 2 years or 3 years or whatever. The law does require that you can't incur debt beyond what you believe the useful life of the item is that you're buying. And one of the things that not only businesses but also units of government like larger counties and cities buy is fairly complicated software to carry on some of their functions, and it's typically sold by companies like SAP and Oracle and PeopleSoft and that kind of thing. And this is, you know, very expensive software that's oftentimes modified by programmers to adapt to the county or the city's needs. And some of the counties, I think the requests initially came from St. Paul, felt it was appropriate to sort of spread this cost over a number of years.
That's unbelievable.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess that was kind of what raised the red flag for me was that you don't usually think of having notes for things that are sort of expire quickly. And I guess as you were going through this, I don't recall who the author of these provisions was, but I guess that was, Madam Chair, that these were yours. I assume then that since we're removing the sunsets that this has worked out pretty well and there haven't been any problems with these provisions, and are we anywhere different than we were when this was first put in?
Well, Rip and Leland, they actually came, I'm the author, but they came as recommendations from the Public Finance Institute when they were here before us kind of walking through that they wanted clarification on, and I should be truthful and tell you that I was one of the legislators that represent, or that Mr. Michael is talking about, who I thought bonding for software and would oppose these and thought they don't have the life to warrant it. But I lost and we've been doing it, and my understanding is the state allows it. We, the legislature, do it at the state level. This is for the local units of government, but I think what's happened is the Public Finance Institute has brought it forward. I think they just like us to make a decision on it one way or another. But I decided I was okay with it, as Mr. Michael said. I was thinking of it like, you know, you go buy your TurboTax or whatever. And actually, that's not what these local units of government are buying. They're buying, like, GIS systems. I mean, they're buying sometimes, you know, $1 million system. So that's a very different definition for software. So I actually thought it was okay. But Representative Lanning and others have been on the committee know that this has been a thing we've discussed, and I've been opposed, but I've been persuaded now. I don't know if others have thoughts.
Thank you.
Is there anything else? We do have the Schumper Amendment here. Remember, there is an amendment here. I don't know if someone wants to move it. I don't know if Representative Schumper came back, but we can talk about this one. It's the A1 Amendment. Mr. Michael, without anyone moving it, can you just describe the amendment? I think what it does is it addresses Representative Schumper's issue and the county's issue, because it raises their ability to do bonding, but it does have a reverse referendum. So maybe Mr. Michael can just go through it and we'll see if someone wants to offer it. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is it's the A1 amendment. It's a two-page this is an effort on my part to sort of come up with a compromise that might address some of the policy problems in this area. The first section, which is section 4 of the amendment, corrects what I think could fairly be characterized as sort of an anomaly in the law now, and that anomaly is that when you do a normal levy or a levy for these least revenue bonds or bonds that are exempt from referenda, they're imposed on tax capacity, which of course has a preferential rate for homes. However, if the county or the city decides to go the plain vanilla general obligation route and submit to the voters the bond issue, then it's subject to referendum market value tax base, which essentially takes away the preference for homeowners. And so that creates a big disincentive for cities and counties to submit these issues to the voters, because if they do, not only do they have to convince the voters to approve it, but the voters pay twice, but their homeowners pay twice as much for the privilege of voting on it. This came into effect back when the school referenda were subjected to referendum market value, and I think it was felt they needed to get cities and counties into the act, but the reality, as you've heard the testimony, is that cities and counties actually have lots of ways to avoid referenda. That's not true for schools. So what this does is it just says, if you have new voter-approved debt would be subject to the regular tax capacity tax. The only thing that cities and counties would be subject to on these referenda is if they've got some kind of levy limit that they're voting to exceed. So that's the one thing. The second change increases the permitted amount of debt under the capital improvement program law for counties. As you heard Mr. Carlson testify, that limit is now oftentimes too low to finance these projects in smaller counties. And so the counties are faced with the situation that, gee, we can't finance our whole project using capital improvement bonds. And so then the natural thing is, well, we'll finance part of it with this. And keep in mind, these are subject to reverse referendum, which is what the chair was talking about before. Well, we'll finance maybe part of it with that and the balance with lease revenue bonds. And, of course, lease revenue bonds are more expensive than plain vanilla CIP general obligation bonds. So this essentially doubles, or a little more than doubles, the limit which will allow most of these projects to go forward for courthouses and jails and that sort of thing. The next change, when we raise that limit, we also have to raise the corresponding net debt limit. Otherwise, that will stop them from issuing these kinds of general obligation bonds. And so this raises that limit by 50%. Those lease revenue bonds not only are exempt from referenda, but they're also exempt from the net debt limit. The fourth change, and this is where the sort of the vinegar comes with the sweetness or whatever. This is what Representative Shumper was roughly proposing, which is to say that the least revenue bonds would lose their referendum exemption. So then the way counties would need to finance these courthouse or jail type improvements would be under the CIP law, which would be subject to a reverse referendum. You could do, one or more parts of these without that, if you think that makes policy sense, and not take away. If you can give them the carrot and not use the stick, or you can do both. So anyway, but in response to a request from the chair, this is sort of a alternative to Representative Shumper's bill.
Hello, Representative Shumper. I hate to see him not be here for this, but I'm going to go ahead and move the A1 amendment. Discussion to the A1 amendment. Can members, Mr. Michael, describe it? It's allowing for more ability to do some bonding, but it's requiring the reverse referendum, and it's getting rid of this adverse impact of folks doing a more expensive way to avoid a vote. Discussion? Rep. Yarosnoff, this is statewide. This would blend the concerns of both the county and Representative Shumper. Discussion, Representative Wolfsager.
Would Mr. Carlson or others be willing to testify on this?
Yes. They are looking for the amendment.
You know, Chair and members, frankly, the reason I'm asking for this is I'm very, very unsure about going ahead with this without knowing more about what the implications would be for the state.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Carlson,
I think the first page plus that continuing down through lines 2.11 we are very agreeable with. As I identified in my earlier testimony on Representative Shumper's bill, part of the problem that we face and that forces counties to consider the alternative of having an HRA, an EDA, a port authority issue bonds and then leasing the facility back from them is because the current authority that we have under the CIP programs I guess the 641 citation, but basically the CIP is not sufficient to allow us to build and bond for these facilities without going to that alternative device. So anything that raises the level of the bonds that we can issue under the CIP program, we certainly appreciate. But the language then beginning down there on lines 214 through 216, we still frankly object to. In instances of at least some counties, the authority granted the additional authority granted on lines 1.19 through the top of through lines 211 is great, but for smaller jurisdictions, it still may not be sufficient, or even for larger jurisdictions when they're dealing with very large facilities. The facilities that we're talking about are not small enterprises or undertaking. As I said, the facility in Blue Earth County was $35 million, or they hope will be $35 million. That's not small, even for a moderately large county of that size. So we would still appreciate having the authority that is constrained by the language on lines 2.14 through 2.16.
And Madam Chair, I would agree on behalf of the other counties that Keith doesn't represent.
Further discussion? Mr. Michael has a table of all the dollar amounts by county. By county, we're going to hand that out. And so again, members, unless there are other questions, what we're looking at here is the through page 1 and page 2 through 2.11. Good for the counties. They like this. We heard that. They should. This should really help them be able to bond for some of this stuff, but we get to 212 to 218. Not that they don't like that. That's what Representative Shumper would like. Okay, so this is merging Representative Shumper's wishes with the county wishes. Of course, motions are in order. This one's in front of us. Mr. Michael, you want to tell us what we're looking at here real quick with the handout that we've just received? And Representative Shumper's just walked in, so maybe someone can bring him the amendment and get him up to speed on where we're at. Mr. Michael.
Just to go through the table, the first column after the county names is the taxable market value, which is used as the base for calculating these debt limits. This it's somewhat somewhat difficult calculating exactly what the CIP limit is, because that's a limit that's keyed to the maximum principal and interest in any one year under the bond issue. So you need to know two variables, what's the interest rate and what's the maturity or the term of the bonds, in order to calculate that. This is calculated on the assumption of a 5% interest rate and a 30-year bond. 5% now is probably on the high side. So the next column shows what the CIP limit is on those assumptions under present law. Then the next column shows what it would be under the A1 amendment, so you can get an idea of how much they could finance with this. The next column, so it's the second from the right, is the existing net debt limit, and then the very far right column is the net debt limit under the increase in the A1 amendment. And now many of these counties have already used up some of this authority. So, for example, I know that the metropolitan area counties have financed, and the CIP law was enacted for them to finance some of their jails and other facilities with this, and so they've used this. So this is the gross amount less whatever they've got outstanding.
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, I just want to clarify for the committee, CIP stands for Capital Improvement Program. And although the discussion today has been focused on jails and law enforcement centers, basically our CIPs, which are five-year capital expenditure plans or programs, covers all the capital expenditures made by the counties during that period. So besides courthouses, law enforcement centers, jails, a big, big item within our capital improvement programs is our highways. This would be covered within these debt limits. So although they may seem impress the committee as large, after you take into account the expenditures that we have to make to improve or build new roads, you know, our system is frankly substantially larger than the counties, it's not that much authority available to us. So, again, we are very grateful for the additional authority, and Mr. Michael has already pointed out some of this authority has been already exhausted. For example, Anoka County, in a bill that you had previously authorized, sought separate authority to issue bonds for its library, because they could not fit the expenditures within their existing CIP limit.
Representative Solver.
Well, Madam Chair, the controversy seems to be here on not so much on roads or highways, that type of thing, but it seems to be jails, right? Is that where the difficulty comes in, particularly as it relates to counties being able to finance the jails and are using creative ways to be able to do that. Because sometimes the Department of Corrections comes in and orders the county to be able to change or build a jail. And counties have used their CIP capacity and then the lease ranges. But would it help us instead of having an overreaching type of activity for roads and libraries and all the other things that counties may have to do, to be able to have lines 12 through 16 somehow drafted specifically for the jail provision?
Which lines?
Well, the one that's controversial.
Oh, on the second page?
If you look at the history of using a lease purchase type of thing, or leases, the state has done it equally as well. And we didn't want to have a big bonding bill. We let the St. Paul Port Authority build the building, and we're leasing couple of buildings, the Freeman Building and the other buildings, from the St. Paul Port Authority. We did the same thing that we are telling counties not to do.
So, Representative Solberg, you're looking for a way to tighten up pages 214, or 2.14
through 2.18. Well, Madam Chair, I don't know if we can or not, or if that's the right thing, or if it's a suggestion on my part, because the controversy is here before us,
mm-hmm.
and has been a controversy in many parts of the state as it relates to jails, and not as it relates to roads or libraries or other things. And when we have primary use by a county or an agent of the county, maybe, I don't know if I'm parking up a wrong tree or not.
Mr. Michael? Representative Solberg barking up the wrong tree here. Thoughts on,
I've got lots of barking.
Thoughts on what he's trying to achieve. Is that doable?
I certainly you could substitute the language, say, from Representative Shumper's bill. The fact that the controversy oftentimes relates to the county jails and related facilities is why the counties feel they need to use this option, and so I don't think they use leased revenue bonds, for example, for parks or roads much at all. It's for these kinds of facilities, and so I'm not sure that sort of narrowing that down would solve this conflict between the counties and, Representative Shumper. So,
Representative Fulmer.
Madam Chair and Mr. Michael, is this a reverse referendum then for jails, or is this a direct approval of the electorate?
Mr. Michael.
What this does is it eliminates the leased revenue bonds exemption from the direct referendum. So you could not, essentially it would make it infeasible to use leased revenue bonds for these kinds of facilities. Instead, the counties would need to use the county capital improvement program bonds, which are subject to referenda. To reverse referenda. So essentially what it would do is it would compel them to do those projects under the CIP law, which, as the testifiers have indicated, that's going to force them to create capital improvement plans in order to qualify under that law. I think in most cases they de facto do that in planning one of these facilities.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Serving on the Public Safety Committee, I can tell you that having a jail or a correctional facility in your community isn't necessarily the most popular thing. And I think that if we want to make it so that the state has to be involved every single time one of these sites are going to be cited, making this a statewide policy is a really good way to ensure that we're going to see a lot more of these controversies here at the legislature. Now, when Representative Shumper asked me about the issue previously, I said, please make it subject for your own community and not statewide. And you said, please make it statewide, don't make it subject to your own community. But I do believe that these are important facilities, and again, the Department of Corrections is the one that weighs in and lets a local unit of government know that they have to do something. They maybe didn't give them a timeline here, but they informed them they had to have a plan. And so I can guarantee that if we don't let them do this as part of their plan, this will fail in the community, and they will be back before the legislature saying, okay, the Department of Corrections has told us we have to do something, and you've told us we had to go out for a referendum, and we can't pass it, or we did a reverse referendum, and it didn't pass, so now we can't issue these bonds. State, now tell us what to do. So I think that that is what you're going to see many times over with the language online 2.12 to 2.18.
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, just to follow up on what Representative Hillstrom is saying, and if that scenario were played out and they came back here, it would put the legislature in a position where we would have to overrule, if they had a court order to build a jail, and we'd have to overrule the local referendum and think of the politics of that locally and what people might think after they voted on an issue.
Further discussion? Representative Shumper, you want to jump in here? I think, people can see the amendment. I've offered it. Obviously, people can oppose parts of it. Representative Shumper?
The assumption that if a referendum is defeated, everything goes to a halt. It seems to me that if I was on a county board and my referendum proposal was defeated, the next day I'd design a different referendum procedure or proposal, just like we see school districts doing. Secondly, the possibility of a reverse referendum, I think, is going to make county boards more responsive to listen to the public before they put proposals on the ballot. Simple as that. Essentially that's all that's wrong here. I'm absolutely convinced that the right proposal on the ballot in our county would fly through with an 80% approval rating. They simply have the wrong proposal together here, and it's drawing a lot of ire and opposition. And the public doesn't have any leverage. If they had to bring it under the either direct referendum or reverse referendum, the public would have some leverage to make the county boards negotiate it and come up with a more acceptable proposal. They don't have any leverage right now to do it. So I don't think everything is dire by simply having this reverse referendum possibility hanging out there. And it might pass. Who knows? I mean, just because you have a referendum doesn't presuppose that it's going to be defeated. That would be my response.
Madam Chair, if I just could, I think the one issue is I don't think it's just as easy as redesigning the proposal. I think that with the jail specifically, wherever you place it, it's one of those things where frequently people don't want those projects in their backyard. And if you move it from Caledonia to somewhere else, you might just stir up a new hornet's nest with a different group of constituents. And I don't want to presume that the board hasn't talked about all this locally. I think they have. And again, as I said earlier, if we want to bring the board in and talk with them, I think they'd be happy to make their case. But I don't think you want 87 county boards coming here and explaining why a jail was put in one city versus another or out in the country or shared between two. I don't think that's where you want to go.
Representative Culver.
Madam Chair, Mr. Michael, 373.40 paragraph 1 for subdivision on paragraph B, is that jails?
Representative Solberg, no, it's a much broader definition of, just like Mr. Carlson was saying, it includes roads, parks, libraries, county social service administrative buildings, as well as jails. So it's sort of, it's sort of all of the things you would imagine a county would have in a capital improvement program, basically.
Well, Madam Chair, to follow up on that a little bit, I know my county moved their social services to another building, and it became very controversial because they had to do some borrowing. I mean, they needed to do it. They had to have the space. But if social services, isn't they more popular than jails with the electorate? If we had had a reverse referendum, I think that would have probably have stopped them from doing that type of thing. I think we have to be a little bit careful about taking a local issue, which I'm very sympathetic to, and imposing statewide standards for everybody. Maybe we should, but I just want to be tread lightly on that.
Representative Simpson and Hillstrom.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's been a very interesting debate, and it's certainly a change in policy if we make this change. And just kind of going off what Representative Hillstrom was talking about, taking it one step farther, if we do this route and then they come back to us, the county comes back to us and says, we did what you told us to do, we can't pass a referendum, the judicial system is saying we need a facility, does that mean then the state's going to be liable to build them a facility? Because you've opened up the door to, making that argument, making it very strong. So,
well, Representative Simpson, I mean, the other way to approach this is just to give them the authority without a vote at all, including a reverse referendum, and then no referendum or reverse referendum, and then all the counties can build these, and that won't solve Representative Schomper's problem because they want a say in it. But I mean, if it's this, then they'll come back to the state. I mean, then you can do what we do with most things, is we don't require a vote and we don't require a reverse referendum. We just have direct democracy take place.
To that point, Madam Chair, I think that we have that option. I mean, that comes before us all the time. I mean, at every level, mm-hmm. every level wants to take the next level to make them the bad guys. And, the county board is letting Representative Chumper be the bad guy, and now Representative Chumper is letting us be the bad guy. And then, at every level, that's the way it seems to move. So you are correct.
Who can we blame it on? Representative Hillstrom.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I have two options here. I can either request that this be made subject just for Houston County, or I believe the motion would be to delete line 2.14 to 2.16.
So are you making that motion to delete, or are you dividing, or what is your motion?
Madam Chair, I guess I'm asking a Representative Shumper and you, the Chair, as to your wishes, because in the event that we don't make it subject just to the county that has the controversy, my motion will be to delete those lines.
Representative Shumper?
I'm more than open to having it just apply to Houston County.
Good answer. So, if Mr. Michael, it sounds like, did you want to, Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, just one thing to be aware of, which I know Representative Shumper is, that under the Constitution, if you enact a special law that restricts a local unit of government and that government does not have a population that exceeds 1 million, it is required by the Constitution to be subject to local approval. And so the Houston County Board would make the decision as to whether this law were to apply to them. Now, you can go ahead and do it, and it's like sending a letter from the legislature, a very formal letter from the legislature to the county board, but you know that, and I would we would not do it in this format on lines 14 to 16. We'd want to enact a separate section that only applied to Houston County, because this is going into the would go into the statute. But we, if it's the committee's wishes, I can fairly quickly draft something that would do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just move to delete line 2.14 to line 2.16.
Representative Filstrom moves to delete lines 2.14 through 2.18. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure who else, too, but were the Filstrom amendment to be successful, would there still be a need for the language on lines 2.8 to 2.11?
Yeah, I think so.
Mr. Mike. Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, that the increase in the net debt limit really needs to go up, or the CIP limit increase will, for some counties, not be effective, because although they could issue the bonds under the CIP law, they could not issue them under the net debt law. And so this is like there are two sets of limits that apply, and so they have to be work in concert to allow the funding of these projects.
Thanks for that clarification.
Representative Shumper.
Well, and Mr. Michaels, you can correct me, but my understanding is if Representative Hillstrom's amendment passes, counties will still have the option of doing the lease options in order to circumvent any kind of referendum, whether direct or reverse.
Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, Representative Shumper, that is correct. But by deleting that language is the language that modifies the exemption for lease revenue bonds from the referendum requirements. So that would continue as current law does.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The one thing that it does do, however, is it does raise the maximum amounts that they're allowed to do in the other areas, and every county is going to want to do the thing that is cheaper. And so I think that there may be an incentive here to have the county board actually do it subject to the reverse referendum if they see that there is a financial benefit and they can actually afford to do it the way in which it ought to be done.
Representative Solmer.
Oh. And Chair, I guess I'm almost of the desire, though, to send the county a very strong letter. And if we could have that drafted, at least could have the this committee consider that, if that's not too much of a drafting problem. Because I think you put it right back in your board and say, so obviously someone's paying attention to this hearing, and there will be, if they don't respond to a strong letter, there may be a stronger letter to follow.
Representative Liebling.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I just wanted to kind of confirm my understanding of what we're doing here along the lines that Representative Kilstrom was talking about. And it seems to me what we're doing, if her amendment would pass, is we're essentially giving them the carrot but not the stick. Is that a fair way to put it? And I just wanted to ask Representative Shumper whether he thought that giving them the carrot would make any difference without the stick.
It's, in all seriousness, they already have the carrot. If they chose either the regular general obligation bonds or the capital improvement bonding proposal, which is a reverse referendum, either one of them will be a lower interest rate, as we've been told, and less cost over the 20-year term of the thing for the county and for the taxpayers. But for some reason, they're willing to choose the more expensive option right now.
Well, Representative Shumper, you weren't in here yet, but this is a bigger carrot, okay? So somebody wants to show you the sheet. And if Matthews, you can look at Houston County. And if you look over at your taxable market value for Houston, and then your CIP limit in the next column under current law, this amendment changes your CIP limit pretty significantly here, more than doubles it. And then it lifts the net debt limit as well, so that they're going to have more options here. Houston now can go off and have more incentives, I guess, to do it the way we'd like them to, which is to not do least in an attempt to avoid a reverse referendum. So I think the carrot's there, only it's now a bigger and more inviting carrot than it was before, for a hungrier rabbit, I guess. But the stick is gone with the Hillstrom amendment. So do you see that now, Representative Shumper?
Yes, I don't know. Out, but now I understand.
Hard to know what your county commissioners think about all that, but just thought we'd put that out there.
I'm not certain.
Representative Liebling?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just thinking we could do this and send a strong letter, or are those things inconsistent? I'm kind of losing what we're doing here.
In Representative Liebling, we could. I think House Research is working on that amendment next for Representative Solber. But it's being copied right now, but right now we're on the Hillstrom Amendment to the amendment. Further discussion on the Hillstrom Amendment to the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Nay. There's one for you. The amendment is adopted. Okay, so that's on there. Now we're on the full amendment. Did we, Representative Solberg, you don't need to offer it to this.
I don't need to offer it to this.
To the A1. So now we have the A1 before us, and I had moved that. We've removed those lines that Representative Hillstrom had requested. Discussion to the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. And if there are other amendments, otherwise we're waiting for Representative Solberg's firm letter amendment. Representative Simpson.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't have an amendment drafted, but I had thought about bringing forth an issue that I know you're very interested in, because we had a great discussion about it last night. Representative Nornes's jobs Renaissance Zone bill for Fergus Falls, and we had that in front of this committee, and we had a good debate, and that issue continues, and the Senate does have a strong position in the tax bill for it. But as I look around this room and see the amount of people on my side of the aisle, they're quite limited.
Have they abandoned?
The only thing that I might say is that I think some of my colleagues on the table or all around the table understand what we're trying to do there, and I think that you're softening to it. I think you're listening, and so at this time I won't offer it. But I do think that still has a lot of merit.
And Representative Carlson knows that. We're all thinking hard on how to, and Representative Dabney, what to do with Fergus Falls Treatment Center up there, and Representative Simpson's not going to let us forget to keep thinking hard. Thank you. Representative Solber, your amendment is here being passed out.
The staff is amazing.
Yes, they are, aren't they? How'd they pull that off? Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Jeff Dyson, who's been helping us with this bill, anticipated this and had it ready.
Is she here?
Yes.
Mr. Dyson, thank you for the anticipation of, and the DD 059 amendment. We appreciate keeping track of us here on the tax committee. Representative Solberg, did you want to?
Well, Madam Chair, I will move this as an amendment, if I may.
Representative Solberg, move the DD 059.
And I would ask then, I noticed on 1.16, the 10% is still in there. I would ask Representative Schumper if you want to move that.
Representative Schumper, line 1.16, you have a copy?
Yes, I didn't realize this was what the amendment was that you were talking about.
Do you want to, Representative Solberg asked you about the 10% number.
Well, and, you know, as I indicated previously, when you amended my original amendment, 5% is great.
Representative Solberg incorporates on line 1.16, 5 instead of the word 10, to the 059 amendment.
It's further, stronger,
yes. Further discussion to the now super strong letter. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And is this right that this will be specific in state law just for Houston County? I mean, these jails are going up all over. I know this has been talked about before, but man, this is going to put pressure on legislators to come in when you have, this is really poor policy. That's what I'm going to say. And I don't know why we would want to do it just for one here.
Madam Chair.
Representative Silver.
Madam Chair, I think the law that we were talking about, general law, also has some poor policy in it, and we need to be careful of that as well. And I think what we realize that this has to be approved by the county board. So as I think Mr. Michael said, this is a strong letter to them. If they don't respond, that's probably their right to do that. Mr. Michael, this would be just in session law, is that correct?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, that's correct. This is not going to statute.
Representative Wolfsinger.
Chair members, I agree with Representative Marquardt on this. I mean, I was on a school board for 8 years, and we dealt with thousands of mundane things that the public could have cared less about, but then they came out on a special issue. And then when that issue was over, they went away. And, I mean, that's been my experience on a local board. And on a county board, I do have some empathy for county commissioners who deal with thousands of mundane things, and then there's one thing that they make the decision on, and then a whole group of people come out and don't like it. So I don't have a lot of sympathy sometimes for people who aren't paying attention to elections. They aren't paying attention to who's running. They could care less to even ask what their issue is on the county jail, blah, blah, blah. So I am not in favor of this Houston County direct because I see it expanding. And I've got Wabasha County. And there's internet folks, there's telephone, there's horseback riding, you know, to run over to the county to say, look at what Houston County did now, you know, let's change everything that we were thinking about in Wabasha County. So I think it's ugly. Sorry.
Further discussion.
Well, Madam Chair, obviously this is going to be a strong discussion with people in the conference committee. And it'll be before them. And I don't have a oar in this water, but if we can try to solve some problems and not create others from other parts of the state is what my attention.
Further discussion? If not, all those in favor of the 059 amendment say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Further amendments?
No.
Representative Carlson.
This last amendment when we talked about staff anticipating this. I looked at it at first and said 8:47 a.m. And then I looked at the date. Talk about anticipating.
Wow.
So somebody was really thinking
ahead.
She's a week ahead of schedule there. Wow, that's amazing. Thank you for that. We are back now to the House File 2268 is amended. Are there further amendments? If not, we're ready to send off the omnibus public finance bill. Discussion, all those in favor say, oh, excuse me, it has to go to Ways and Means, members.
And Madam Chair, tomorrow after session, we will have a quick Ways and Means committee.
Okay, and that is because, members, if you look on the Hornstein bill for Metro Area Transit, has a slight cost in 2011. And so Representative Fulberg is going to help everyone figure out that's the only cost item in this bill. Generally, the Omnibus Public Finance Bill has no cost item at all because these are all local bonding pieces. But Metro Transit, there's a little piece there, and Ways and Means is going to figure that out for us.
And we'll figure it out in 5 seconds.
All those in favor of sending House Bill 2268 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion is adopted. You know, the last thing I just want to say is we are going to hear the Hennepin County Minneapolis Library bill here this week. We're going to hear somebody else has something. I can't remember what it is now. And there's still the Vikings. And then we may still be dealing with the constitutional dedication for hunting and fishing. So this is not the last meeting. And we will let you know. Hopefully we're going to meet Thursday. Thank you. We are adjourned.